The October 11th, 2023 meeting of Health, Human Services, and Housing to order. We have an unusual time of the month. We moved the meeting back a little bit to accommodate the Jewish holidays at the beginning of the month, and also we started a little bit early because we've got a pretty big agenda tonight, so I appreciate everyone for accommodating that, and I'm very excited to have such a full room, and I appreciate also the flexibility with moving across the hall. So I will begin first with, before we get into our presentation, I will begin by asking for a motion to approve the September 6th meeting minutes.
So moved.
All right, moved by Stewart, second by Corcoran. Is there any discussion on the meeting minutes from September 6th? Legislator Erner?
I just am seeing them now. And I'm wondering if we can wait, just not approve them this month, because if anyone else would like to wait, because I just haven't had a chance to read them, and I'd rather do so before voting.
I have no problem with that. Does anyone else have an objection with that? We can just approve both in the November meeting.
Fine.
Okay, that's fine. So we can just move on. We have a special guest tonight. I'm very grateful for the attendance of the new CEO for Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley, Josh Ratner. Josh, thank you so much for being here. We're going to hear a short presentation, and then legislators are going to have the opportunity to ask some questions. And without further ado, I will hand it over to Mr. Ratner.
Okay, Steve?
That's perfect. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for having me here this evening. I'll put together a couple of slides, an overview of Westchester Medical Health Network and also some of the advancements here locally with Health Alliance. So hopefully you find this helpful and informative. So first up, I wanted to take us through just a little bit of history. So Westchester Medical Center started in 1917, really birthed out of the World War I and steeped in the Spanish flu. We've got a long history at the medical center of serving the public need, first for Spanish flu, then for tuberculosis. In the 80s and 90s, we had started one of the first AIDS clinics, and then later on for Ebola, and most recently, obviously, with COVID and monkeypox, and et cetera. So as a public hospital-led health network, a lot of what we do is provide safety net services for the Hudson Valley overall. This here, what you see behind us, is a map of the service area for WMC Health. Some are familiar, some are not, but essentially what we do is we've got hospitals across the Hudson Valley, starting up in the northwest with Margaretville Hospital up in Delaware County, and going through Ulster County. Obviously, we have in Orange County two hospitals, in Rockland County a hospital, and in Westchester a hospital. But when you look at our service area as a whole, it covers the entire area, and depending on the service lines of particular types of patients, we can go as far north as the Canadian border. So, for example, during COVID, when there were staffing shortages in the north, we regularly received helicopters from some of the northern hospitals that were bringing down patients due to an overload and a census that couldn't be accommodated, for example, up in Buffalo and other parts of the state. One of the things that we're most proud about is that we provide an enormous community benefit through all of the communities. We're oftentimes the largest employer in a particular community, and in addition to the trickle-down effect of those salaries, there's also the effect of purchasing as well as the uncompensated care and the other pieces. So just about $750,000 in, $360 million of community benefit given when we look at the latest data. And I think that's one of those areas that a little bit different for each of our hospitals, depending on what that looks like. We're very particular about making sure that we really want to understand that in each of the regions that we serve, there are different public health needs, different types of services provided, and making sure that, you know, all health care is delivered local. And so part of that is really focusing on the outreach to the community. Some of you may be aware, some of you are not, but when you look at the services and the patients that we provide care for across the Hudson Valley, again, the service area being the eight counties, what you see here behind me is some of our market presence in terms of the number of patients that we treat from an inpatient perspective. We are the number one provider of neurosciences, the number one provider of trauma, which I think a lot of folks are aware of, pediatric services, as well as tertiary care, behavioral health services. And one of the things that we are most proud of, and if we continue to see, is we receive about 12,000 transfers a year those transfers come to us in the form of a helicopter or an ambulance, and they're being sent to us from other hospitals in the Hudson Valley, not just our own hospitals, but any hospital. And that's because of the level of care that we provide at Westchester Medical Center, but frankly, at our trauma centers across the Hudson Valley. So a little bit about specifically about Health Alliance. When you look at that map that I originally put up on the screen, we really look at Hudson Valley as three regions. There's the northern region, which is Delaware, Ulster, and Dutchess. There's the western region, which is Sullivan, Orange, and Rockland. And there's the southern region, which is Putnam and Westchester. Obviously very different different needs, different access, different types of services provided. And so what we're looking at here behind us is several years ago we developed a northern strategic plan that looked at Health Alliance Hospital as well as Mid-Hudson Regional, the old St. Francis Hospital, and looking at the community needs within each of those areas, including Delaware County, Margaretville, and looking at where we could provide not only the baseline level of acute care services like emergency department services, orthopedics, inpatient medical surgical beds, but looking at how can we create centers of excellence. Centers of excellence will allow us to do things like recruit physicians. Physician recruitment is a key issue in this day and age. There's a shortage of physicians across the country, and when you're recruiting a physician, they want to know that they're coming to a particular hospital that is going to offer the full cadre of services. And so what we did is we looked at the needs overall across the county, and we set a strategic plan for the two institutions, where we looked at Ulster County, the demand and the access, the centers of excellence that we were focusing on are cardiovascular services, neurosciences, women's health, and trauma. And on the Mid-Hudson Regional side, we were looking at physical medicine and rehab, so rehab, behavioral health and substance abuse, as well as pediatrics. Understanding, let me just preface this, right? There are needs on both sides of the river, but the key, though, is in this day and age to make sure that we can try to reduce duplication, but also, frankly, to be able to ensure that we're offering a quality service. Just because you offer it doesn't make it high quality. And the capital investment, the physician recruitment, and frankly, the nurses to support that type of program or programs are key. And so with that being said, let me go to the next slide. This is an overview of Health Alliance Hospital and Margaretville Hospital today. I'm most proud of the fact that we have many services that are currently offered in this community, and we were recently approved, and you will hear about it in the near future. We were approved to become a level 3 trauma center at Health Alliance. That's an example where when we looked at the data of the number of residents that live in Ulster County that had a traumatic experience and needed to go to an emergency room for trauma, the reality is that today you're put in the back of an ambulance more often than not. You go across the Mid-Hudson Bridge, and there are two trauma centers, left and right, Vassar and St. Francis Hospital. The number of Ulster County residents that go across the river for trauma care is very, very large. So our plan was, and we're executing on, the development of a trauma center locally so that residents can stay local. And frankly, what trauma does for Ulster County and for Health Alliance, it creates not only improved access for the community, but it becomes a baseline for further recruitment. So things like later next year you're going to hear about, and I'm probably scooping myself. I'll get to it. But I'm excited about all of the services we're going to be developing in the future, specifically interventional stroke services. When you think about oftentimes time is brain or time is heart muscle, having local access for heart attacks and strokes and those types of services are key, where time really matters. And so I'm sure you've heard about recently, in the last roughly 15 months, we went live with a new interventional cath lab. So for those who aren't involved in the intricacies or aware, if you come into the emergency room and you have crushing chest pain and we suspect you're having a heart attack, what usually happens is we do a lab workup, we do a radiological workup, and we might even do what's called a diagnostic workup, where we'll look to see if any of your arteries are clogged. Well, previously, if that happened, we would basically sew you up and ship you out to a hospital that had an interventional cath lab. Now you can stay local, and we've been able to recruit a number of interventional cardiologists, and frankly, the number of lives that we've saved here locally in the last 15 months is really unbelievable. So we know that by creating the opportunity to bring those services local, we can really improve health outcomes overall, and we're very excited about that. So we've got a number of developments underway. We recently broke broke ground. We started construction on the redevelopment of the 20-bedded inpatient behavioral health unit, which I know everybody's very interested in, understandably so, and we expect that that unit will be finished probably by the first quarter of next year, depending on construction. I'm sure if any of you have done construction, you know that that could be the first quarter of next year, it could be the second quarter of next year, but we're going to try to manage that project to open it as soon as possible. Really what's exciting is, for the longest time, and I'm sure Dr. Smith can attest, the hardest part is recruiting psychiatrists. We've been able to recruit a full-time psychiatrist for Health Alliance. So that is a key element of opening those services to make sure that we have the clinical services. The next issue for us, and the more, frankly, even equally as important, is having the nurses and the patient care techs and others to support that. So we're going to begin ramping up the recruitment period for that, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to do that. On this slide behind you, you can see here with Health Alliance opening and the recent investments, kind of some of the volumes that we've seen there. And we're continuing to see, really the focus for me right now, if you have not heard, is in our emergency department. The reason for that is today, if you looked at the number of patients that get admitted to our hospital, how many of those patients come through the emergency room? I don't know if anybody wants to take a guess. About 90%. What? Yeah, good. You said 80%. It's 90%, way too high. A typical community hospital, that would be about 80 to 85%. The reality of the difference between those two numbers is surgical interventions, elective surgery. And so the first focus for me in coming in and really re-engaging with our internal and external community is to try to offer the best patient and physician experience in the ED. Oftentimes folks come into the ED, they feel like they're waiting too long, they don't know what's happening, they have to be, oftentimes you have to be then discharged and sent to a physician's office, and trying to improve that experience for everybody that encounters us, to me, is the number one priority, and that's what we're focused on right now. At the same time, re-engaging with the surgeons that we employ and that we partner with locally, as well as some of our independent voluntary physicians who have been very dedicated to this community to make sure that we have what's necessary to build on it from there. So here's the future investments. I touched on behavioral health and kind of that expansion. We've recently included some additional imaging services, and neurosciences is next. We're looking at a biplane room, which will allow you to do the same thing for brain as you do for heart. You come in, we suspect you of having a stroke. We can provide the catheterization where we coil up, we check for a clog, we put a stent in, and that allows you to essentially clear the stroke. And what we've seen across a number of our community hospitals, by basically recruiting interventional neurosurgeons, the trauma program becomes the base for that, because you can support a full-blown stroke program and a full-blown cardiac program. And so some of what you're seeing here is the execution of a several-year plan that will allow us to continue, frankly, to rebuild confidence in our hospital, which over a number of years has eroded, and patients have essentially had to go elsewhere for that. And that's not lost on me or anybody else, and I think part of it is just making sure that we listen and we hear and we make sure we provide good care. On the community engagement side, it's something that we're very proud of, and also with the addition of Tom Scaglione here, who's one our new Vice President for Government and Community Relations, a Kingston resident. One of the things that we're really focused on is how do we engage with the community on a regular basis. On the bottom left there, you'll see our mobile coach. That's actually a licensed medical clinic, but it goes out into the community and provides health and wellness and screenings. And you can see a list of community partners up on the side there. That's obviously just an example. And I think a lot of hospitals feel like they need to go work in the community because they have to support their not-for-profit status, and they need to report publicly how much they do. And our mission is to say, if we can try to help partner with those who engage with the community to keep the community healthy, then that's our goal, and that's what we're really trying to focus on. And here's an example also of some local examples of some of the things that we've been doing most recently with various partners, whether it was O Positive, unfortunately it was rainy last weekend, but O Positive and the HITS Festival, looking at areas where folks are out either exercising or being active, and as a way to support those activities because we believe the missions are aligned. And that is my, I'm sorry I went through that quick, but I know I have 10 minutes, so I'm certainly open to questions.
Right.
Thank you.
I would like to open up questions from the first the committee and then other legislators that are present. And I see Legislator Stewart first, and then we'll go to Legislator Petit next.
First of all, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. I was wondering if you could maybe discuss, you were talking about community outreach,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering if you guys could discuss the relationship with SUNY Ulster and their nursing program.
Yeah, great. So one of the things, actually,
tomorrow
I have a meeting with them. One of the things that we're really focused on right now is the employment pipeline. There is a shortage everywhere, every type of position. And Tom will tell you that I spend a lot of time focused on how do we create that pipeline with local institutions. What you think about where we are in Midtown, what a wonderful opportunity, right? We have the new hospital. Across the street is the SUNY Ulster Extension Campus. Behind that is the new high school. Then behind that will be the Healthy Village. This vision that we laid out now almost 10 years ago of creating a walkable healthcare innovation education district is real. And we have a lot of positions in the hospital that are vacant because we can't find workforce. And many people think of hospitals, they think of doctors and nurses. But the reality is that we have patient care techs, and we have dietary, we have engineering, we have housekeeping. These are well-paid jobs that have benefits, and we can't find qualified individuals. So in working with SUNY Ulster, we're hoping that if we can't at least recruit from the local community, then maybe we create some educational pipelines with some internship opportunities to do that.
Right.
So Ulster BOCES, then we have a job fair on the 19th.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you for
okay. Where's your job fair going to be?
It's going to be at the hospital in the auditorium, at the health department.
Mary's Avenue in the auditorium, right off of Mary's Avenue there.
Nice. Thank you.
Sure.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. Of course, I had questions about the loss of mental health
sure.
and substance abuse beds. And then we had anticipated the 20-bed section opening up, I think, the end of 2022 or beginning of 2023. And there is a significant wait when you send patients over to Mid-Hudson. So,
mm-hmm.
Is there a plan B to expand that? And also, you had mentioned hiring or recruiting new people.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be reaching out to the 42 positions that were eliminated during COVID to see if they're still available to bring back into the Kingston area?
Sure. So let me go with the last question first, if you don't mind, and I'll work backwards. We're open to, the first thing is anybody who was previously a nurse with us that was either relocated to a position across the river at Mid-Hudson Regional, or frankly whose job was eliminated, we would be reaching out to them to let them know there's opportunity. And frankly, there are a number of nursing positions open today that are vacant that we're recruiting for. So the answer is yes. The first piece of that is there's probably a misunderstanding. It was never 2022. It was the end of 23 in terms of the inpatient mental health beds, because that new hospital didn't even open up until December 24th of 22. So I'm hoping, and my internal team understands, that I'm shooting for the end of 23. I'd rather stay the first quarter of 24, and if we come in early, great. Frankly, what you're going to find is I'm about as transparent as they come. If I don't think we can hit that date, then I will let you know. There's no reason not to. If you were to go to the campus today, they're literally swinging hammers and breaking tiles and starting to rebuild it. So the goal is, as fast as we can get that done and get the staff recruited, we will open. I do want to caution everybody. We're going to open those beds, and there's going to be a wait. Across the Hudson Valley, across the country, the reality is that there's way more demand than there is capability. And frankly, I think part of what we're looking to do is we've had, a long-standing relationship with the county overall. I think that working with the Stabilization Center and with our own outpatient services, continuing to look at really where the need is, frankly, is on the outpatient side. I will tell you that today, if you looked at our behavioral health ED for both substance abuse and mental health, the number of patients that come 6 times or more in 6 months is about 75%. So you're talking about the same patients who come over and over and over again. And the reality of that is the disease, unfortunately, is one of those where you've got issues around gaps. Not only, I don't think there's as much gaps in care, because there are some of those, but there's also just the reality of all of the other things that go into a person being healthy in the social determinants overall. So it's a challenge. We're all dealing with it. And ultimately, I think that having those beds locally certainly is important. Frankly, what I'd like to see us with the Center of Excellence for Mid-Hudson is to be able to subspecialize, because it's not just about mental health. It's about depression and eating disorders and suicidal tendencies
And a lot of mental health institutions today just have a psychiatrist. They're not able to specialize. And what we've been able to do in Valhalla, for example, we have 101 beds there. We're one of two providers in the Hudson Valley for child and adolescent inpatient psychiatry. And what we've been able to do more recently, you start some of those boutique or subspecialized programs. They're expensive. Medicaid does not cover them. And frankly, having them regionally is probably the only way to ensure that there is access for it. That was a lot, sorry, but that's what it is.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. To follow up on the mental health discussion,
sure.
How will services that you offer in the new unit compare to what you had offered previously?
So I think what you're going to find is that the services, the inpatient mental health services, are ostensibly the same. I think they're going to be better because it's going to be a completely renovated new unit. The unit that was there, the units that were there previously, were frankly capital starved. They were hadn't been renovated in a number of years, and there were even instances with some code compliance with OMH over the years that we were really trying to keep up to speed, but frankly weren't. And frankly, at the end, before those beds were moved, I would say probably 20 of those beds weren't even fully functional because we were trying to get them upgraded for code issues.
Other questions from the committee? Legislator Stewart?
I was wondering if you could explain further the health village concept.
Sure. So across the Hudson Valley, I'll use an analogy, I'll get there. Across the Hudson Valley, you've heard about this brain drain, right? There's folks who are raised here, they go to high school, they go away for college, they don't move back home because there's no availability of jobs. And the result of that is what? There are a lot of elementary schools that are closed because of the need. And what do you do with those elementary schools? When you think about having two hospitals in Kingston for 100 years, there has been a number of years that we've known that you really don't need nor can you support two hospitals and two buildings. So what we did is we came up with the idea of redeveloping the Broadway campus, the old Kingston Hospital, into a healthy village. The healthy village in its concept is a combination of services that we would provide ourselves, meaning Health Alliance. Some of those services will be provided by our network, WMC Health, and some services will be provided by third-party tenants, with the goal of having a more accessible access point on Broadway for those who need outpatient services. And the key, though, is it's not just a medical office building. It's not just outpatient services. It could be anybody who wants to have space in there, rent space in there. It could be folks that are focused on other parts of the social determinants, like access to healthy foods. We're going to have a teaching kitchen in there. There's going to be classrooms. And the goal is that anybody who's in that building, one of the tenets is that the folks will agree to do some form of light care navigation for patients to navigate them between and amongst providers, but also to accept all comers, regardless of the ability to pay. The main point of it is to repurpose infrastructure for the purpose of improving health and wellness in the community at its core.
And how are you doing on renting or leasing those spaces?
Excuse me. So where we're at is it's been a number of years since we initially envisioned it, and the focus has obviously been COVID and now opening the new hospital. So we're back into the planning phase because we need to refresh what that's going to look like. I will tell you that right now, as an example, our plan for Health Alliance, we have I'm pretty safe in saying it's probably the most substantial outpatient behavioral health services in the county right now. And our plan is to co-locate all of those services in the healthy village. So today, if you're out on Barbarossa Lane, you know we have outpatient substance abuse counseling and the methadone program. We have two partial hospitalization programs, one for adult, one for adolescents. We have, I'm blanking now, but anyways, the point is those services will be located there. In addition to that, we'll have a multi-specialty physician practice. For those who are familiar with Grand Street Medical Practice, that's now WMC Health's, they're part of WMC Health Network, and we've recruited new physicians, gastroenterology, Ellis Later's group in Valley Cardiology, part of WMC. We're going to essentially relocate all of those providers to have primary care and specialty care in one location. So that's a long way of getting to your answer. Once we update the plan, then we'll be able to go out, and I've had some discussions early on. Back in the day, I had some conversations with community-based organizations and other not-for-profits about a need to to want to be in that location, and so I'm starting to revisit that group to say, are you still interested, and what does it look like, and some of it's really trying to understand the current need.
Thank you.
Sure.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. So following up on that,
mm-hmm.
This, as you know, is the Health and Housing and Human Services Committee.
Yeah.
And I know that you, Westchester and various people in positions such as ours, elsewhere in the government and the community, have been talking about housing at the former Broadway campus. So my question is basically around that, given that Westchester obtained $89 million in state funds,
mm-hmm.
partly for that healthy village, partly for the new Health Alliance Hospital,
sure.
and the fact that things changed during COVID and services were moved or lost from Kingston, from Ulster County. And so we were able to adjust based on the pandemic. So now, given the emergency housing crisis that in part is because of that and things, why shouldn't things continue to change? Why shouldn't we reallocate those public funds for the emergency housing crisis that we have right now and use the former bed space at Broadway and work with you on that?
That's a good question. So let me do a little bit of background. I'll give you a little bit of background on the state dollars. The state dollars were received under what was called CRFP, the Consolidated Funding Application. And essentially what we did is we submitted an application that was competitively scored and said, here's what we think the program is going to be. And then we were ranked against other projects in the state. The reality is that the program that we put forth is ostensibly what I just articulated to you. And if we hadn't been awarded those dollars, Ulster County would not have gotten them. It would have gone to another part, another region. So I think we have enough latitude within the existing mission or vision of what we described in terms of healthcare services and community-based organization services, but it's not focused on housing. It's not to say that ultimately that there could be an opportunity there. It's not something that we would provide. It's not our core business. And I don't think that it's something that would really make a lot of sense, honestly, without a substantial amount of dollars to go into it otherwise. I do say that our perspective is we partnered with others on housing. So, for example, if you may recall, we gave a grant to REBCO for $1.3 million to help subsidize and look at other properties in Kingston. But we do not have a current standard or idea of putting housing in there for a bunch of reasons. But certainly the other aspects of the social determinants of health.
Yeah, Legislator.
Okay, thank you. I have some other questions about the workforce.
Oh, yeah.
And the patient experience. So you mentioned that 90% of patients come in by emergency, and that's high.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, if I understand correctly, you have a policy not to turn away any patients, that you'll accept patients no matter what.
Correct.
So those two things kind of make sense to me. Can you comment on like nurse-patient ratios agreed to with New York State Department of Health and any opportunities to divert where you feel the staffing or the staff themselves feel the staffing might not be safe or adequate for the situation?
Sure. So I'm going to say right now we have positions open for nurses. I would love to recruit and retain more nurses. I think we've worked, from my perspective, it's not about a restriction in the number of positions right now. It's about finding staff that want to work at Health Alliance. And I think our recruiters are doing a reasonably good job. We have some challenges like everywhere across the state where finding nurses is a challenge. I think what we did initially at the end of last year as a network was look at what are the wages that are needed locally to be able to be competitive. And we made those adjustments. I very much value the work of nurses, and I think that's the lifeblood of any hospital. And I think from my perspective right now, it's just a matter of ensuring that there's an environment where nurses want to work. And part of our challenge today, I'll be honest with you, is nurses need, in order to do their job well, and I'm not a nurse, so please take this with a grain of salt. I think there's some nurses in the audience. Nurses need support, like patient care techs, to do their job, right? And one of the challenges that we had was we could not find patient care techs. Patient care techs are not, I'm going to say, and don't need a higher level of education. You don't need like a college degree. But what happens is if you don't have enough patient care techs, the nurses are doing that job. If everybody isn't operating at top of license, then what you have is, first of all, you have folks who are very dissatisfied, but frankly, from a patient care perspective, it's just, it's not as ideal and it slows things down. So my immediate focus in the last 2 months has been, number one, how can we attract and retain more patient sitters, more patient care techs, and frankly, more unit clerks, so that nurses are freed up to do more of the job of delivering direct health care. And at the same time, having conversations with our nurses to see what else is needed. I would ask each of you, if you've got folks, friends, neighbors that are nurses and want to work, please send them, and I will personally walk them through the process. But it's not about not having enough positions right now. It's about not having enough workforce.
Another question, legislator?
No, the next person shares.
Does anyone else have any more questions? Okay, I would like to move into our regular business. So if there are no further questions, I do want to say we're just going to do questions from the committee. I do want to say as we close this section of the meeting that about 4 years ago, my life was saved in the Broadway campus of the Health Alliance Hospital with a stroke intervention, and I'm incredibly grateful that I received the care that I received from the nurses that I received it from, and I'm very excited to see you expanding, particularly the stroke services, because that window closes very quickly on having someone keep their life the way that they like it, as I have been able to.
Can I make one closing comment?
Yeah.
Is my time up?
No, go for it.
Okay. We didn't get to where we are overnight. I'm not ignorant to what the perception is to Health Alliance Hospital, right? But the reality is it's a gem and it's a key driver in this community and critical aspect for this community. So part of what I'm trying to do is understand what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses and how do we change those. But ultimately it's going to take each of us to give it a chance, and frankly, yes, we've got to hold ourselves accountable to what I'm saying, but ultimately if we don't change the mentality that we're just going to go right past us across the river. I can't tell you the number of stories I've heard recently of people who have done that, and frankly, a couple who have passed away on the bridge. But we've got to re-engage, and everybody has to start to change the narrative that we're doing some things that are exciting and changing the way we deliver health care in Ulster County. So that's my parting words.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
And we have a lot of business ahead of us. I wouldn't fault you at all if you didn't hang out for the whole meeting. So I say that to everyone. But I would like to go directly into business here. We'll give a 30-second break to help folks transition. All right, so we'll now move into regular business. Our first resolution, resolution number 555, adopting the Think Differently initiative for Ulster County and calling on all Ulster County towns, villages, and the city of Kingston to adopt the Think Differently initiative to assist and support individuals with special needs and their families. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
All right, second. Moved by Corcoran, second by Nolan, and we have the sponsors of the legislation here, so I will pass the microphone over to Legislator Sperry and Hansett to give us a little bit of background on this initiative.
Thank you. I'm very excited about this, my co-sponsor and I. So the Think Differently initiative was started approximately 8 years ago in Dutchess County. It was... And since then, it has been adopted in more than 100 communities across the state and across the country. We do many wonderful things for people with disabilities in our county. We just don't have a hub or a database or somewhere where people can go just to find out what we're doing. Each community that has this makes it their own. There's no right, there's no wrong. It's very individualized to your county and your community and what your needs are. So I think the first thing that would be great is just to get a database, a website. For example, if you have a child with a disability, maybe they're in a wheelchair and you would like to take them to a park, there would be one central place where you can go to see which park would be wheelchair accessible. That's just a basic example that I like to give to people. I spent a lot of time, we've spent a lot of time doing our homework, spoken with our neighboring counties. Orange County has this initiative. I've spent much time on the phone with them. They've sent me their programs and how they work it. And I've spent a lot of time speaking with and visiting Dutchess County, and I met with their director, Dana Hopkins, and went over programs and how they do it in Dutchess County because it's our neighboring county. I have spoken with our county executive. She's on board with this as well, and she already has a plan in place on what department it could fall under. And each county does it a little different. In Dutchess County, they put it under their behavioral services. I'm just very excited about this. I'm looking. Just to help those with disabilities of all ages, to be inclusive, and I'm looking for unanimous support on this. Megan?
Yeah, I would just add, thank you for all of that background, but I would also just add that, you know, we're behind. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do that are very easy things to make somebody's quality of life that much better. And, you know, for the example of just having a database on our website of, you know, accessible options and opportunities, whether it's community events or parks or, you know, the fair, right? There's a lot of things that we can do to just even make, you know, folks with disabilities or, you know, families with folks with disabilities feel supported and seen, right? So I think that this is it's the time is now. I know that the executive's office is really focusing on equity and inclusion, and so if we can work together and, you know, help families and these individuals, then, you know, it's a win-win.
Any questions from folks on the committee?
I wonder if you've had any contact with the Discovery Center. It's in Sullivan County rather than here, but on this side of the river, I can look to it as a center for especially autism spectrum disorder and related disabilities.
That one in particular, but what's nice about this is if we become a Think Differently community, we can go to our neighboring counties, Orange County, Dutchess County, Sullivan County, and put all the services together. And I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel here because so many places do have such great programs. So each one in their own county, you know, we have ARC here and we have, ARC-RCAL. And so all those services together from other counties can work together. So, yeah.
So it's the second question is, why put this kind of initiative under this rubric rather than another rubric, either a new Ulster County initiative or what makes this one different than other similar programs that we might look to emulate or spring off?
So the Think Differently initiative has huge name recognition. It is recognized. I don't think something like we have Relay for Life.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we call doing another program like that something different? Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Like, why would we call it something different? This is something that's already established. People know what Think Differently is. So I don't know why we would call it something different, especially that, like, for example, we live in the southern end of the county, so we're adjacent to Orange County. So if there's somebody that lives down that way, they'll know what Think Differently is. I don't know why would we would call it something else. It's something that's already established. It's called Think Differently for a reason. It's so that county government can look at all their different departments and think differently how we can be inclusive. Our parks department, our buildings and grounds, our transportation. We can look at it differently to be accessible to everybody and be inclusive. So I don't know why would we call it something else.
But I think to your point, there's already a foundation, and each, like Legislator Hannett said before, each county is adapting it for their needs and building on. So it's taking this foundation, this, rubric, if you will, and then adding to it or evolving it to fit to that county's needs.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. We can make it our own for our needs.
I want to build on that question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
So in Orange County, do they call it Think Differently?
Yes, they do.
Okay, are they listed on the Think Differently website?
When I get the emails, it has Think Differently.
There's a website called thinkdifferently.net, and that's Dutchess County's website.
Mm-hmm.
So are we partnering with Dutchess County to update the website to include Ulster County?
So what it is, and I asked when I went over to Dutchess County and met with them. So it is not, I asked about the name specifically, and they said anybody can use it because as long as you use it for the good. As long as we all have the same goal in mind of helping people with disabilities and being inclusive. So we can make our own. I mean, we could call it Think Differently Ulster County. I mean, but the name itself has good recognition.
I'm actually a little worried that hurts us. If someone searches this and then they find Dutchess County's website and there's no mention of Ulster County there, like thinkdifferently.net, like, is what I would think would be where, if I told everyone, Ulster County residents, hey, look up Think Differently,
mm-hmm.
and they look up and the first thing they find in Google is thinkdifferently.net and it's all about Dutchess County, I would wonder, wait, is Ulster County actually serious about this? And I want us very much to be serious
mm-hmm.
about this. So I'm actually worried that the name recognition and how much is associated with Dutchess is actually...
But it's not just Dutchess, it's throughout. That's because
right,
that's
the
where
website,
we live.
I only saw Dutchess County information on that website. I might
mm-hmm.
have to check again, but that's my concern. I mean, if we advance this tonight, like, is there a commitment from them to update the website to include us?
I can't speak for them about updating their website, but it's something I can look into.
Okay. Yeah, Legislator Sperry and then Legislator Erner.
But also... as the county executive has stated, whatever department it's in or wherever we put it, it's most likely going to be Think Differently Ulster County. And if we have our own website or own web presence, when you Google Think Differently Ulster County, it's going to pop up and it's going to be routed towards us, not necessarily Dutchess County or Orange County or Sullivan County. I think that the website that you're referring to is the initial one that was started under Molinaro and in Dutchess County. I don't know what their plans are because I think that they're really just kind of putting it out there as if it's open source and being adapt it however you want it. But again, it's us owning it and having it be Think Differently Ulster County or Think Differently Ulster, and then having the information pointed within our website, and just as they do in Sullivan County, in Orange County, and the other counties that have adopted it.
So we just we Googled Think Differently, and it comes up Think Differently Dutchess County, Think Differently Orange County. So as we adopt it and move on, we'll have our own resources. And as I stated before, I think that's the biggest thing that we need to start with is just a website, a hub. And we have to remember that we're doing this for these families with children and adults with disabilities so that they have a place to go. I lost my train of thought because that's what I do. So I apologize.
Yeah. So, you say this is a foundation and
uh-huh.
you meant it in the sense of something to build on, and I agree with that. But it is a little different than if there were a foundation or a nonprofit or somebody that, you know, we know that working with them would be easy. You know, if somebody were coming to work with Ulster County and get something on our website, it might be difficult too. So I think they're actually, across the municipalities can be harder than with some of the other sectors that we deal with. However, I do think people already have some recognition of it. I mean, with the movie theaters, it is mentioned here, and I think that NCG already has a sensory sensitive presentation. I'm not sure they put it under Think Differently, but the thing that I like about a rubric is that then as it gets out there, people can find everything all together.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we had a place that the movies that are making these offerings, Catskill Mountain Keeper has worked with groups that work in the Catskill Park and other parks to have accessibilities of various kinds. If we had this, then we would have a place to do it. So I think that having the cooperation of our county executive and being able to make an Ulster County version of it, you know, whether it's a separate website or whether it's a place on our website, which also could end up being difficult or easy depending upon where things are in the process of evolution of the county's website, I think it can have a benefit. But I would like it to have that benefit for Ulster County residents and not have it seem to be derivative and something less than whatever you have in Dutchess County. Are all the 100 communities that have adopted it in Dutchess and Orange, or are there some
it's
further counties?
It's throughout the state, and now it's throughout the country.
Yeah. What other states, do you know?
Midwest, actually. There's some communities out in the Midwest.
Thank you.
I would like to go to, if it's all right, Legislature Sperry, I'd like to go to Deputy Executive Contreras.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say we've read the resolution. Thank you for sponsoring it. We support it. It seems like a good scale, something that we can kind of start small, and it is a good time. I agree with our chief diversity officer on board and the work that we're doing on the website. Right now, like both of those things combined, I think we can get a good start to this and make it our own. We did have our chief diversity officer take a look at it. She has some like very, very slight tweaks to the language that I can share with you, just as a suggestion. But other than that, this seems like something that we could be able to implement.
Can I just follow up on that? Are you suggesting tweaks to the resolution language?
Yes. An opportunity to do that. I know
it's
kind of, I don't know if there's still a window
to
that. I just email it to the sponsors.
It would be here that we should do it month. The resolution otherwise would be held up or have to be amended on the floor, I guess. It's possible. But if the sponsors are agreeable, we could just enter.
Joanna, while you're looking for that, I just want to say we do so many wonderful things in this county through private agencies and through school districts. And, for example, I have a friend that has a child with severe autism, and we talk a lot about things. And she didn't know we had recently they did a parade late summer, a disabilities awareness parade, and she had no idea about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really something as basic as that is just getting the word out. It's such a service. And like I said, I'm proud of what the county does. And it's just to get it all together so that we can get the word out.
Legislator Lopez.
Yeah, well, it would be important to coordinate with other organizations.
Absolutely,
well,
that's our basis.
Because ARCAL does a lot.
Yes, absolutely, and they're on board.
And they're all about awareness. What I'm interested in is knowing what department oversees like the bulk of the ADA issues as well. I know there's probably a collective like with the DPW to make sure that the curb cuts are accessible and the Parks Recreation Department to make sure that playgrounds and equipment are accessible. Because we tried doing this years ago was actually to create an ADA type committee that was responsible for the oversight of everything ADA related. In the county, and for one reason or another, I thought there was a little bit of pushback that these issues were already being taken care of and overseen by various departments in the county. And I know that I think it was ArtCal that did a study, like every so many years, to see it was an accessibility study to see how accessible the county was, to make sure that again, like there were curb cuts in the right places, that the parks were accessible, that the municipal bathrooms, you know, were ADA compliant, that there were you know, elevators, and that there were what they call a reasonable accommodation on federal ADA, where people were unable to access like public places, and were they making those necessary changes in order to accommodate the person with a disability. And these were all studies that they were doing through ArtCal. So I think it's important to coordinate with places, you know, the nonprofits, ArtCal, Access,
absolutely,
and a handful of others that are out there in order, you know, to get this moving in the direction
right.
that you want to. And again, you don't want to reinvent the wheel.
No,
you don't want to have to do all the things that have already been
right.
done. But if it's coordinating with others in order to bring awareness, and maybe you know, including that on a website, or having, you know, something separate that, you know, people can go to, and when you Google that, think differently, then we will come up. You know, I spoke with Mark. This was years ago when he had created. I think it was like his son may have a disability.
Daughter, yeah.
Yeah, her daughter have a disability, and yeah, it was a great idea then. You know, and since then it's really you know, blossomed into something that's made a difference, I
yes.
think, in a lot of people's lives. So, you know, I'd be absolutely on board with that, and more than willing to, you know, help you with it as well, because, you know, as someone living with a disability,
yeah,
I think that I have, you know, a lot of insight that I'd be
yeah.
able to, you know, share with you, you know, moving forward.
Thank you. And I just want to add to that that actually the director from ArtCal, he read it in the paper, and he reached out to me about it. He's totally on board, so him and I have a good rapport
Anthony's
now.
Great.
Yes,
yeah.
Anthony
their,
is great.
On,
okay.
On their board as well.
So yes, I've gotten very good feedback.
Legislator Sperry?
I just wanted to say also part of the impetus for us sponsoring this is we both sit on the youth board, and we got some really good feedback after the fair, because people really, really were so grateful for the sensory safe space that was at the fair. And so, you know, that was kind of part of the conversation for us, you know, wanting to kind of build on that momentum.
Great. Let's go to Legislator Erner and then Stuart, neither of which have spoken on this topic yet, and then Legislator Nolan. So Erner, you're first.
Thank you. I apologize, I spaced a little when the Deputy Executive Contreras was speaking, but I wanted to follow up on what Deputy Chair Lopez was asking about the where this would go in the administration and workload. Like, is this actually creating a new position?
Yes, would you like to respond to that?
The way that it's written now, it doesn't seem like we would need to create a new position. We're really thinking about... So part of this would be within the Department of Mental Health wheelhouse, because funding from the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities is close to the Office of Mental Health, but there are a few different departments that would be involved here. So we're seeing this as something that our Chief Diversity Officer would spearhead from our office and coordinate to begin with, and then, you know, maybe in the future there would be some other changes, but to start, I think it's something that's important.
Legislator Stuart?
I was just curious if there had been outreach to the school system, the public school system, and if there had any feedback from them.
I have spoken to a couple different districts, my home district, and
okay.
Things like Special Olympics, we don't have Special Olympics in our county, so our students have to travel to other counties, so that's something else that could be part of this.
Right.
But. Again, they're totally on board just for all the resources alone. Yes, I have.
Excellent.
Legislator Nolan?
My question was asked by Legislator Erner and answered, so that's good. But you just mentioned resources. If the county provides through the different departments where we have connections, and we have the diversity officer coordinating and a website, will we expect that there's any funding that will be needed, or how will we address things that people identify as potential benefits?
So when I said resources as far as schools go, I meant like offering different programs that they already do, like a movie that is a no shush zone, for example, and things like that.
So resources for various
so that's why I think
ideas
we can,
that come up?
We can make it our own, and we can start out as small as we need to and then build on it. And there are grants available. There's a lot of things out there that would be helpful. But again, I think that we're on board that we can start out small.
So let's go to Deputy Executive Contreras, and I'm hoping that your comments will include a mention of the amendments you suggest, or perhaps the timing of that. Yes,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, on the resources, I think we're hoping that this can be, we did include a budget for the Chief Diversity Officer in the executive proposal, so, and that includes expense. So I'm thinking that this can be accomplished under that budget. As to the amendments, they're very, very minor, so if they're just their wording changes. So on the first page, the third whereas, where it says changing the way they welcome a customer that may have sensory issues, we just wanted to suggest maybe differently abled and or have sensory issues.
Is that on the second page?
Okay, can you read it again?
Whereas a business can think differently by changing the way they welcome a customer that may be differently able and or have sensory issues. Just adding that.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. And then this is very, again, minor. On page three where it mentions picnic, can we just broaden it out to say events to celebrate and raise awareness around all of the trees?
Where is that?
That's the third bullet on page three. All right, so I can, and it was just those two?
Yeah.
So, are the sponsors comfortable with those changes?
Yes. Yeah.
So I can feed those out, and then someone can make the motion. So I'd like to ask for a motion to adjust the third whereas to strike have sensory issues and replace it with be differently abled and or have sensory issues.
So you can leave sensory issues.
Sorry. Yeah, that may be the right. We're leaving sensory issues. Okay. So then,
insert.
Sorry. So after May to insert be differently
is
abled.
Is issues
and
or challenges?
Pardon me.
Is it issues or challenges?
Yeah. Did you want to change it to be challenges?
I don't think so because they don't.
Okay.
Yep.
Issues is
better.
Yeah.
Yeah
okay.
So just not the third whereas. The third whereas on page.
Third. Okay. So the third whereas on. Let me start over. Let me start over. The third whereas on page three to insert after May. To insert the language be differently abled and or. And then on page three, the third bullet to strike picnics and replace it with events.
Motion.
All right. Moved by Corker. Second by Lopez. Any discussion on the motion, on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
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 All right, any opposed? Okay. On the, is there any further discussion on the resolution?
I'd like to be added as sponsor.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. Can we all be added as sponsors?
All right.
Got him off?
He missed it.
Anyone who wants to be added as a sponsor can make sure to let Jay know afterwards. I think she's got a count, but if you want to make sure. All right, so it sounds like there's no further discussion. So with that, I will call the vote. All those in favor of Resolution 555?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, let's see. Great, thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Resolution 569. Amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for a 4% cost of living adjustment for eligible programs to the Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan.
Second by Stuart. And I know we do a lot of COLA increases, so and it's going to be a long meeting, so we don't necessarily need to hear commentary unless there is any. All right. Any questions, comments, or concerns from those on the committee? All those in favor of Resolution 569?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. Resolution number 570, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with Access Supports for Living, Inc. to provide mental health services to the community at the Golden Hill Office Building to the Department of Public Works. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan.
I'll second that.
Second by Stuart. And on this, I think it would be helpful to hear a little bit of background. So, Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a little bit of background. Any questions from the committee? I do want to point out, just I know we talk a lot about the cost of leases and the space and county space in general. This is $11 a square foot. That is, you know, less than we pay for a lot of the space that we as tenants lease. I understand the reasons for that and how important it is to have access there, but because a lot of other conversations around these tend to revolve around that pricing, I wanted this committee not to be flat-footed if that comes up in another committee. Not that you would be flat-footed. That's probably the wrong phrase. I just wanted to bring that up because it's something that I've asked our staff to help us keep an eye on as well, so that we're always thinking about that as well, because it's been such a hot issue.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments, or concerns on Resolution 570? All right, with that, I'll call the question on 570. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 570 is unanimous. 568, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of Health to continue the tobacco enforcement program through the Department of Health.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan. Second by Corcoran. And Dr. Smith, if you would like to give us a brief overview of this, although I know we've discussed it before.
Yeah, it really is in support of the New York State Public Health Law, which is one of about 19 or 20 laws that govern the use and sale and restrictions that are basically evolving or revolving around tobacco use. And this particular 2-foot grant from the state for $63,765 on the current cycle is for 1 year. In the past, it had been 5-year grants. We've had this particular grant now literally for at least a decade. And what it entails is that we ensure that tobacco retailers in our health jurisdiction do not sell tobacco, nicotine-related products, vaping-related products to anyone under the age of 21, which is now has been adopted as the age for legal sales across the state. So our inspectors go out, and if a retailer sells to someone who and not check, for instance, their age through checking their driver's license or some other identification to ensure that they are 21 or older, if they should sell any tobacco product to that person, they are in violation of this TUPA law. And this particular grant, which covers really only part of our activity, to be honest with you, but it does help us to support the enforcement of the New York State law regulating these products. If you want further information about it, because certainly if a retailer is found in violation and sells the product to someone under 21, that they can be subject to fines. It's also a point system, and if they persist in violating the law, they can jeopardize their status in being able to sell lottery products, for instance, or lottery tickets, as well as tobacco, their tobacco sale license that comes under the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance. So there are penalties associated with it. And I think to date we've issued about 158 permits to different retailers as per the Ulster County law, which requires that retailers that sell tobacco-related products have a permit, but this particular law involves the New York State law that we protect adolescents from becoming addicted to tobacco and tobacco products.
Great, thank you so much. Legislator Stewart and then Erner.
I just had a random question. Would this affect sales of, like, nicotine gum, for example?
No.
And I think it's also worth recognizing this doesn't change the law, it just enforces
it. Right.
Yeah. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Dr. Smith, do you have anything to do with other uses of tobacco, like ceremonial? Ceremonial tobacco can be grown also in Ulster County, but I know that commercial tobacco is regulated by the federal government for growing it on a farm.
We don't oversee, we oversee the sale of it in retail establishments, not the growing of it, per se. If that is going on, that's not under our jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? All right, with that, I will call the question on Resolution 568. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 563, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $126,000 entered into by the county with Pure Food LLC doing business as Mom's Meals for the Office for the Aging. I have a motion to discuss.
Mm-hmm. So moved.
I move by Nolan, second by Erner. And Director Copenhaver, do you want to give us a little bit of background on the this particular company?
Sure. Mom's Meals was contracted as an alternative for folks who need different types of home delivered meals and that they may not be able to get through Gateway, such as vegan, diabetic, heart health, more restrictive diet type of things that Gateway cannot handle through their subcontractor when they need to make them themselves. So Mom's Meals are delivered every 2 weeks, and we get to taste them, so we know what their quality is as well. We get a sampling of their menus, and they're pretty good, and they've actually grown in popularity, which is nice. So it's just an alternative for folks at home if they can't tolerate whatever Gateway's bringing to them.
I'd just like to say that I really appreciate this. I have a lot of allergies and special dietary needs, and if I were having these delivered, I've actually not gone to the hospital.
Never go out again.
That's right. I could survive because I actually have resisted going to the hospital on an occasion because I felt like I would not be able to eat if I went there. And so our to know that our Meals on Wheels services would actually accommodate people in similar situations makes me very happy.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. Two questions. The scope of services mentions eligible individuals. Can you describe the eligibility? Like, I heard categories of types of diets, but how is the eligibility actually determined?
Whoever's our client on the program. So if we have a client on a home delivered meal program. So we actually have clients who are just meals, meal recipients, and then we have clients who have all three of our services through the ISEP program. So anybody who's a client of ours, whether it's the full program or a meals recipient, can get these meals.
So
I mean, we're not supplying the whole county, but we're focusing on our clients.
Is mainly in the senior population or other populations?
Over is our catchment area, yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. Legislator Stewart? Actually, no, I had Legislator Petit.
What are the deliverables? How many folks do you have on the program?
I think at this point there might be close to 40. I could be wrong.
And it's five meals?
It's actually 10. It's every 2 weeks, and they have a process by which they flash cool these meals, and they're good in your refrigerator for 2 weeks. Don't ask me how that happens, but that's how they deliver them to us in these kind of refrigerated boxes. And there, as you saw, Pure Foods is the parent company, and they're based in the Midwest. So they have a very, very large kitchen out there where these things come from, and they're sent all over the country, and they're getting bigger. Also, kosher meals are part of that, so I don't think Gateway can supply kosher meals, so that's a big commitment on their part to do that as well.
Yep, Legislator Stewart.
So you said the primary target audience, for lack of a better word, are folks who are 60 and over?
Yes, that's who our clients are, yes.
Okay, and does that include people who would be of that age group in emergency housing as well, or?
We haven't had that request, to be honest.
Right. I was just curious, so, yeah.
I don't know if there's refrigeration or freezers in those places. Gateway's meals are frozen, and these are flash cooled, so if there's a way to keeping them and heating them up, that's a possibility.
It's my understanding that they do have refrigerators, but
not freezers.
So
something like this would be appropriate if they, you know, match the criteria. Typically, we don't, you know, understand that we don't have people on Medicaid on our program. So if those folks are on Medicaid, that's a different funding stream entirely. Okay.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Legislator.
Thank you. And you mentioned the increasing popularity of the program. Does that explain the increase in the amendment as well as the difference between this year and next year?
Yep. And that's fine. We have a large budget for this, and we also have some money from NYSOFA, and I've brought this up before, that they've been very generous with their unmet needs grants, and that this would be definitely an unmet need as far as nutrition programs are concerned.
That sounds like a great program.
It is. It is great.
All right. Well, if there are no further questions, then I will call the question on Resolution 563. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That was unanimous. Resolution 558, approving the execution of a contract for $275,000 and sanctioned by the county with Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley through the Department of Finance. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
And a second. All right. So moved by Nolan, second by Erner. And I believe that Director Litwin for this one, or Deputy Executive Contreras?
I'd be happy to speak.
Great.
So you just want some background?
Yeah, a little. This is our first, your first opportunity to introduce us with a narrative alongside the resolution.
Great. Well, I just thank you then. So this was part of a previous funding resolution that was an ARPA resolution, and now we've gotten to the point where the contract is drafted, and so this is a contract resolution to approve so that subrecipients with Community Foundations of the Valley can then implement this grant program. There was, it is on the record, and there was a presentation by one of the vice presidents of Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley at the ARPA committee meeting, which this passed. So I'm sorry that they're not here to present as well, but that is available for the committee to review. That said, I do think that we have found an excellent partner who has handled grant programs of this size and for this targeted group through a separate program, which is the Hudson Valley Farm Fresh Food Grant Program, which they've been handling since 2014, and they've been doing it every year. They were very helpful, Community Foundation for Hudson Valley, in providing documents of that grant and how they would operate. Of course, I did draft the contract and the Schedule A and B, but some of what they provided was very helpful in just making sure. I definitely wanted to make sure that there was a very clear process, which I hope carries through in the reading of particularly the Schedule A and Schedule B of the contract, and how receivables will happen, what the costs are, and at what points, you know, there will be county involvement, and at what points it'll solely be the subrecipient's responsibility. So I try tried to delineate that fairly closely and clearly, with Schedule A being the scope of services and Schedule B being the payment plan on the grants.
Any questions? Yep, Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I was excited when we spoke about this last night, but I'm looking, and it does say for emergency food providers and those they serve. So I'm trying to find the contract now. So does that mean it only goes to established emergency service providers, or is there an outside of the box? Would it allow a nonprofit to partner with, say, a food truck or other vendor who's willing to, you know, to provide that service as well? And is it, can it be a more finite area, or are we looking at the entire county? Because a lot of the current service providers, it's all volunteer. I believe even
right.
Office of the Aging, you know, a lot of the deliveries are volunteer-based. But
yes, and it's, so that language specifically is from the resolution, the funding resolution, and I chose it specifically because I wanted to ensure that the clear language of the former resolution was in, and so the legislative intent will carry through into the contract. That said, I mean, this is a grant program that would be for nonprofits, but we always try to leave the door open for also folks who are able to get a fiscal sponsor, because I do realize that a lot of the, and we've had this experience with the nonprofit grant program in the ARPA division, trying to reach and help, you know, potentially all volunteer organizations. So the fiscal sponsorship is something that I know has been a part of the Hudson Valley Farm Fresh Food Grant Program, which is where the Communities Foundations for the Hudson Valley have done a similar grant program before, and so I think they have also expertise in assisting small grant applicants. So I hope we would reach those
okay.
groups.
Thank you.
Legislator Stewart and then Nolan.
I was wondering what relationship, if any, this group has with like the Roundup Bowers Valley Growers Association, for example, and if you have outreach to them to get food from local growers.
I can't answer on a specific group.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would have to run that through them. But I wouldn't be shocked if they certainly have a relationship or know about them because
right.
of their years, multiple years of experience, you know, doing a grant program with a farm community.
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to add that a fiscally sponsored organization, the organization that is sponsoring them is a nonprofit, and so it would fall completely within this. And I would hope that if anybody's having trouble finding a fiscal sponsor, that even this committee could serve as a resource. But usually a group that's doing good work can find a fiscal nonprofit to take on that role. So should cover it.
And I just want to ask a quick question before we go to Legislator Erner's question. Can you describe the governance over the like scoring criteria and scoring committee? Because that's all going to be handled internally with one county appointee, if I recall from reading in the resolution. Can you describe that?
Yeah, the one county appointee was actually something that I added. Of course, it's for the committee's review. Given that this is a small grant program and that we are working with a subrecipient that has considerable expertise, I am more comfortable, and I hope the county is more comfortable, in giving them wide latitude in making the decisions on who is awarded, because I think that is largely what will happen here. But I did want, and it will have to be designated, there is only one that we're designating here in this contract, one county participant. But I did want the county to have at least, you know, they're not going to have a majority, so if there's any sort of vote or difference of opinion, there's only one. But I did think it was important just for the county to be a participant and know a little bit about the process.
Thank you. Legislator Erner?
Thanks. I think I know the answer, but either for the chair of the committee or the administration, is this going to cover the intent of Resolution 127?
Which, for reference, is the resolution I submitted about 6 months ago to compel the county to provide meals for all people in emergency housing.
Hazard an answer. I can say that this is a start. This is $275,000 of funding. Of course, there will be a 5% admin fee, but 95% is direct support. This is one-time funding. It is the ARPA, SLFRF program. So it does sunset. I think that there's two contracts, really, when we talk about the larger $350,000 food security program. That's all funded under ARPA. So there is $75,000 that is already in contract and already happening with Ulster County Food Security and Access Network. And that there's been three meetings so far. They meet quarterly. And there, by contract, there is to be a report from that group to the county by the end of the year, the calendar year. And then it can be amended and adjusted for the next 2 years. So the county has a mechanism now for receiving input from the various participants of that group, which is open to the food security providers in the county. I know it's a little bit of a long-winded answer, but there's a long-term next three-year process in place for getting input, and I think that report will have potentially funding recommendations as well. So obviously this is one grant program, but there's a mechanism for getting additional funding recommendations, which may have to come from another source of funds, but it would be by the end of the year, I hope, for the legislature's consideration.
Can I build on that? Because I think the question in some ways can be answered by me as a sponsor of that legislation, which is that, one of the reasons why that legislation that I submitted, hoping to ensure that every single person in emergency housing would receive a meal, would be fed every day, part of the reason why I, that it hit a roadblock and I haven't pushed on it is because we are, contract agencies struggle to provide the meals that they need to provide already. And so coming from the top down and saying, all of these meals need to be provided, who can step up and provide it, it was clear that there was going to be no one that could step up. And so coming at it from this angle, while it doesn't meet that goal of making sure that everyone gets a meal, I don't know that there was anyone that could meet that goal. And so by taking this approach from the ground up and looking at some of the same contract potential nonprofit contract agencies, and I think about the Kingston Emergency Food Collaborative, who I volunteered for, who I volunteered for years now. I think about groups like that who can probably take advantage of a grant like this. And if we can see who is able to participate in programs like this and start to build the patchwork from the ground up and work towards that goal from the ground up, I know it's not going to be the silver bullet that I was hoping that piece of legislation would set in motion, but I'm very excited about this for the exact same reasons I submitted that legislation. So I do think that it's an inflection point for me if I decide to withdraw that legislation now. I haven't made that decision, but I certainly feel very comfortable knowing that we're going to be putting resources in the hands of people that can provide meals today. Any other questions from folks on the committee? All right. With that, I will call the question on 558. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 558 is unanimous. 560, resolution number 562, approving the execution of a contract for $74,000 entered into by the county with HRNA Advisors, Inc. to the Department of Planning. I have a motion to discuss. Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second?
Second
by Corcoran. You beat you to it. And we have Director Doyle here, and I will defer to you to give us a brief overview.
So this was funding that came through the County Planning Department as part of the Housing Smart Communities Initiative. This contract will work directly with the town of Woodstock to do outreach and work on their zoning statutes and also help them identify sites for affordable housing. It will go
Stewart and then Nolan.
How do I get Marvel Town on your list?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Go ahead, Legislator Stewart. My apologies.
Oh, no worries. My question, Director Doyle, is how do I get Marvel Town on
that? That was
list?
So this is obviously this is a bottom up approach that the Housing Smart Community is. You have to essentially pass a resolution to become part of that process,
which they are.
The municipality.
Marvel Town has.
Yes.
They haven't reached out to us and requested consulting services. They would have to reach out to us and request the consulting services. We would then work with them to develop the scope of services. We do have what we call on-call consultants relative to those services, and we would work with them to, we do have what they call a mini RFP with respect to the qualified consultants, and we would work with them to choose a consultant. We did put money in the county planning department's budget to continue this program next year. So there would be funding, assuming it stays in the budget, there will be funding for this work to be done next year. With the areas that we're currently working on, we're probably going to be close to exhausting the funding that we currently have.
So I just need to reach out to your office and supply you with those details.
Absolutely, yeah. It would be better, obviously, since we're working with the municipalities and it has to do with zoning work and other types of authority, it'd be better to come from the municipality itself.
Okay.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you.
That was my question.
All right.
Service. Yeah, thank you.
Very good. Any other questions, comments, or concerns?
I just want to say that I love the idea of an on-call planner.
Yeah, especially
if you're
consensus there.
All right, with that, I will call the question on resolution number 562, approving the execution of a contract for 74th. That one, I need to read it. So
yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, that one is approved. Thank you. Resolution number 564, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $171,391.92, entered into by the county with VMC Consultants through the Department of Social Services.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan. Second by Erner. And we have Deputy Commissioner Woods here. There you are. I will defer to you to give us a brief overview of
So VMC Group is our transportation contractor that oversees the busing and parent reimbursement for our preschoolers and early intervention children that require transportation to and from services. And this is the last year of the term. Next year we'll go out to RFP for contracting services with them.
Any questions from the committee? Concerns? Conversation? Discussion? Secret vote? All right, well, if there's none, I will call the question on 564. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 564 is approved unanimously. Resolution number 565, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $100,000 entered into by the county with Industrial Medicine Associates, PC, through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit, and Deputy Commissioner Wood, I will... Again, for you, if you want to give us a brief overview.
So this is, again, a contract is for our individuals on temporary assistance to help us determine employability. If they're eligible for employability, help them receive those services. If not, also refer them to basically a KSAC services, substance abuse, and alcohol services if they need.
I have a question. I'll defer to the committee. Does anyone on the committee have any questions?
I do, but I'll hear yours.
Okay, sure. So in July, we approved a contract. I believe this is the one that's in relation to. Yeah, in July, we approved a contract with Emergency One, which appears to be for the same services that began, and that contract runs from July of this year till the end of June 2025. And I'm curious how those...
So Emergency One is contracted for family and children's services, mainly... individuals that have open preventive child protective services and ongoing preventive and foster care services. So that's the Emergency One contract, where we actually will do drug screening either at the office and send them to Emergency One, or we'll send the clients to the Emergency One site for their screening. IMA has to do with temporary assistance, and
like I said, the employability issue and requirements of OBTA.
Great. Okay.
Understood. Legislator Petit, yeah.
I thought we had done one as well.
Yeah.
And to follow up, I had had someone reach out from social services, and when I went to the office to kind of help her out, there was someone who had 2 weeks before been released from a program, and apparently with this release, I talked to David McNamara about it. He said they just kind of release folks and say, oh yeah, well, Samadhi, Midway, blah, but they don't really follow through with that. And this woman had been homeless. She had only gotten assistance for a couple of days through family. So if someone comes to you, is this more that the client needs to submit to the testing, or can they admittedly say, I'm getting out of a program, I had a couple of drinks last night, which was going to lead to more, and would you then, is this part of that too?
I'm honestly not sure how to answer that question. My understanding of the program is it's an ongoing thing, so it's not necessarily, if they come in and they need emergency assistance,
yeah,
application, they would apply then, and then this program would come in more towards the towards the end, like a rated recertification.
Yeah.
I can check with some of the guy and get back to you on that process.
Yeah.
For it, because I know that not everybody goes through IMA. I think, again, it's depending on what they supply to the department. If it satisfies the needs or TDA, then they may not go through the IMA process.
Okay.
But I can find that out for you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? Okay, I will call the question on resolution.
Oh, I wanted to hear that thought. May I hear that thought?
Well,
thank you.
This company is available to do the testing. They're not the ones that determine whether or not the testing is done, correct?
Okay, so it's just really for testing. It's not really for referrals or further program assistance or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will find out the process of how somebody goes to IMA, if everybody gets referred or if it's just certain people for them. And they, like you said, they just determine.
They do it once somebody is referred to them.
Assessment and everything.
Okay.
So I think your concern needs to be addressed at a different step in the process.
Right, to assist before they need to refer.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
The reason of the referral. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? All right. All those in favor of Resolution 565?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that is approved unanimously. Resolution 566, approving the execution of a contract for $70,000 entered into by the county with Nicholas Kamen through the Department of Social Services.
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan and a second by Stewart. And Deputy Commissioner Wood, if you want to give us a quick background.
So this is funded from the state Office of Child, Children and Family Services. It's a behavioral health specialist that we contract with full time, and he works with our clients coming through child protective services that may be in need of not only testing but referrals to substance abuse treatment centers. On it could be residential, it could be in the community. He works one on one with them to get them into.
Any questions, comments, or concerns? Legislator Erner.
Thank you. The Deputy Commissioner mentioned this is an individual who does all the work. It's not as the name suggests, it's Nicholas Kamen.
Yeah, so CPS Preventive Services, that end, this end of the building, where they would have family court proceedings or possible children being removed for it. So it's specific to that programming.
I guess I believe the question is that this is a person. This isn't like an agency.
This is a person.
An individual.
When this money first came out, again, it was put out for a proposal. We put it out on Indeed, different things like that. This was an applicant that applied and met the criteria from the state. And this is actually going to be this is his third year, per se. And he just gets repaying him, reimbursing the $70,000 for the contract.
Does that answer that was your question, right?
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's totally fine. Thank you. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? All right. On resolution number 566, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That one is unanimous.
Resolution number 567, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $86,047 and entered into by the county with Liberty Resources, Inc. through the Department of Social Services.
Move it.
Moved by Nolan. Seconded by Petit. And again, for the perhaps the last resolution, I will defer to Deputy Commissioner Wood to give us a little background.
I think this might be the last contract from Liberty coming through for you, because I know we've had it the past couple of months. But again, it's the same program through Liberty Resources at Coordinated Children's Services. There are high-intensive adolescents, really, that we're trying to not place in care. And this is, again, we're kind of expanded over the years, and this is an individual therapist that is part of the team that works with the caseworker and the family.
Any questions, comments, or concerns? All right. On resolution number 567, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That is unanimous. Resolution number 568, amending the 2023 to 2028 capital improvement program, amending capital project number 645, renovation of 21 Elizabeth Street, Elizabeth Manor Emergency Housing. I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to take a motion to discuss this, but I don't know from the sponsor if they want this to be advanced, although I didn't hear either way, so I'll entertain a motion to discuss. Moved by Erner. Seconded by Stuart, and so we're in discussion for this. Again, now, just for those of us who weren't at the Democratic Caucus last night, I would, if it's possible, I would like to hear from Deputy Executive Contreras to describe where you are at with the Elizabeth Manor project.
Sure. So we have a draft RFP, or SOQ, most likely statement of qualifications. We are looking to solicit proposals from agencies who would be interested in taking on the project, who have experience in renovating houses and creating affordable housing. This would be another way of getting to the same goal that we have of creating necessary housing for members of our community. We're open to the type of housing as long as it's affordable or emergency housing, supportive housing, transitional housing, any of the critical gaps that we're facing now. But there are agencies out there who have experience putting together private and public funding sources, so we're hoping that this is a way that we can get a partner who can help us move forward towards the goal in a way that everybody is comfortable with.
And just to refresh everyone's memory, the resolution that we're looking at right here is was submitted by Legislator Gavaris to pull the capital funding that we had initially set aside for Elizabeth Manor, and it would, you know, kind of, my understanding is it would mean that the project doesn't advance any further. So my personal feeling, speaking not as chair, but just as a legislator who's going to have to vote on this, is I'm not comfortable myself at this time. I'd like to see how this all plays out, but I'm very curious to hear what the committee has to say and think. Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I completely oppose moving forward with this resolution until we have a chance to see what the alternative pathways develop and emerge from that. And so I think we should either take no action or
yeah,
postpone this.
That was your going to say, Legislator. Okay. I'm comfortable if, I mean, does anyone want to speak further on this? Otherwise, we'll move on to the next resolution. Okay. Great. Do you think by next month we'll have more information about the something with Elizabeth Manor moving forward, though?
So if we put it out by next week, we probably want to have it open by
right.
3 or 4 weeks.
But we'll be able to, but at that time, we'll be able to see the RFP, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
And you know, because for those of us that, you know, and I think many of us support the creation of housing and feel a certain stress around this project having gotten expensive, we have a few resolutions that are, you know, would basically mark the end of our efforts here. And so as we try and put that off, those of us that feel strongly about that, which I include myself among, it's very helpful to have continued updates on how things are going in Elizabeth Manor. It's only so long we can hold off resolutions that would kill the project. Just to be super clear. Yep, Legislator Stewart.
And I was just wondering if we could get the deputy executive to kind of explain how the RFPs that you're requesting now could actually basically come to our rescue as far as financing this project.
So there are nonprofits who do this, you know, kind of on a regular basis,
right,
develop supportive housing, and they have the in-house capacity to apply for state funding to do that. In our case, we were going to hire consultants to put that HAP funding application together, but then given the long timeline, we were looking at 6 or 12 months for that process to go through. At some point, we had, I think we collectively decided not to pursue that path and to explore county funding instead.
Right.
But then we had the cost estimate, which raised concern. So this would allow us to hopefully find a partner who already has that capability in-house and the experience in doing it on a regular basis. And we can move forward with that.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right, so with that, I'll move on to the next resolution. Resolution number 596, setting a public hearing on proposed law, proposed local law number 13 of 2023, a local law amending the administrative code for the County of Ulster, local law number 10 of 2008, to establish the Office of Housing Council to be held on Tuesday, November 14th, 2023 at 7:20 p.m. And can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Stewart, second by Pete. And Legislator Erner is the sponsor. I'm happy to have passed you the microphone to give us a little bit of background.
Okay, thank you. the overall context, of course, is the continuing housing crisis. And this legislature had awarded a contract at the beginning of this year to Legal Services of the Hudson Valley using ARPA money, that was Resolution 20, that was to supplement what Legal Services was able to do. In other words, we last fall had identified a gap in the representation that tenants facing eviction from their homes would experience when they went for representation. I have data here for eviction filings from Ulster County. This is from the state court administration. According to our own counsel, Chris Ragucci, who as we know is a judge in the town of Rosendale and would hear eviction cases in his town, this is surely an underestimate of the number of filings. I hope that you had a chance to look at that backup information, or if you didn't, I can just read a couple of numbers off of that. But the need is clearly established if you believe that folks ought to have legal representation when they're facing the loss of their home, which I do. Is this need being fulfilled right now by Legal Services and any other resources that we know of, especially for low-income tenants? The answer, I believe, is no, for a variety of reasons. Some of those limitations include if conflicts of interest arise with Legal Services, income qualifications, which I'll get into in a minute what those are in this proposed law, and also because Legal Services is a federally qualified legal agency, there are certain residents of our county who would not be eligible under any circumstance for those services. Now, I'll tell you, New York City has had this since 2017. Westchester County just established it this year. The basic idea is we set some minimum guarantee that we're going to give people a right to remain housed if they're able to prove that they ought to be in court, and I believe that it will pay for itself. There is a right to counsel coalition that is advocating around New York State for this to be passed on a state level. There is state legislation, in fact, in committee that would do this and presumably would fund this with a much bigger pot than we have here in Ulster County. But again, I feel like the need is urgent. We can't wait or depend on the state to necessarily do that. That said, if the state does enact it, then that would supersede what we do and take care of it. This report from the New York State Office of Court Administration itself even has recommendations, and they describe the experience in New York City since they've enacted it. And I haven't read it in detail, but the coalition tells me that the anticipated benefits include to the workforce that currently are carrying out eviction defense without adequate resources. The government is currently paying for the current court system, which without right to counsel is basically a public subsidy to landlords, and tenant representation rates are low unless we guarantee that they can have representation, and then attorneys who do represent tenants often don't have the time and other resources to fully litigate cases, and so therefore tenants' rights often go unrealized. So let's get into what this actually would do here in Ulster County. This would establish this office within the public defender's office, which is a legal thing we can do. That said, the public defender wouldn't have a huge role to play, mainly as budget supervising and liaising, that the office holder is doing the job that they're supposed to do. It would be appointed by the county executive separately, so that's a little different because they're not actually a department head and subject to confirmation by the legislature. And then once that process was, once they were put in office, then they would have 6 months to set their office up. Our legislative staffer, Feaster, has created a financial impact assumption that we would have that office head be the lead counsel, there would be one assistant counsel, and where are my new assumptions? There's a pop. And then there would be a paralegal. And after talking with the public defender, who says she has no issue with this, she had questions about the legality, which I think I've answered with counsel. She even identified space that could be leased in the same hallway that her office is currently located, just across from the county courthouse, where this office could be housed. So leasing that space, and then some minor expenses for computers and supplies are assumed here, and then there's professional services, legal and education training, and I hope that you've had a chance to see that as well. We had some discussion in the caucus last night that perhaps the salary assumptions are a little low. We know that we're having trouble hiring on a variety of levels throughout county government. So let me continue to narrate what the office does. It would guarantee a basic consultation for anyone who was sued for eviction from their home by their landlord. A basic consultation is what it sounds like. It's one-time meeting with either the department head or their designee to identify what service they might need. And it could be a referral out to another firm, for example, legal services. This legislation allows for the department head to represent clients themselves or identify an appropriate contractor, which could very well be in some situations the contractors we're familiar with. And then for tenants who are income qualified, it would full representation would be covered. So in other words, again, the department head or whoever they decide to work with would represent these folks through to the end of whatever the disposition is of their case. And let's see what other important details here. I know I've not paused for questions yet, so I can do that. I have a little bit of narration left to go.
Why don't you finish what you're... Unless anyone has questions for what you've said so far, I prefer to let you finish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So, right, we're proposing to put in the Office of Public Defender. The income qualifications the public defender recommended that we line up the federal poverty guideline with what her office uses, which is 250%. Currently, the law says 300%, or 60% of area median income, whichever is higher. The 60% figure came from Westchester. That said, we did just read in the Pattern for Progress report about their recommendation that when doing things regarding AMI for tenants, that we should actually not use the area median income on the whole, but we should use the tenant's area median income. So I might recommend that if we're going to stick with the 60% number, we actually do 60% of tenant's AMI as opposed to all AMI for the county. And anything else here? I actually have a call with Legal Services scheduled for Friday, who said they'd be happy to come and talk at the public hearing, which I'm hoping, even if there are concerns, that this committee would be willing to advance and propose to schedule that. Another legal firm, Hudson Valley Justice Center, which currently doesn't litigate in Ulster County, but will give like phone advice and remote consultation for eviction cases. Their nearest office is in Newburgh. They are also interested in telling us about their experience doing that kind of litigation. So let me pause there. Thank you.
Any questions? Legislator Nolan.
Yeah. I'm reluctant to schedule this for public hearing because I'm not sure this is the best way to get the goal that you've identified accomplished. I completely endorse the goal, and that means providing these services for people who are faced with eviction, who lack the means, and I heard you articulate today, there are also immigrants who might not qualify to be served by Hudson Valley Legal Services. But this proposal, part of the concern I have about the figures for the cost estimates is not only can we get qualified people at these salary levels, but this is salary levels for a certain number of clients to serve them. And that number of clients, I don't know what that is. So I think we need to go to Hudson Valley Legal Services and find out how many clients they're serving for us and how many they could serve if they had the funding to completely serve the entire universe of people who needs these services. They already have staff. They already have offices. And if we're going to try to serve people, I think we might do well to make sure they have adequate staff and space rather than stand up a new program to do that. If we would miss out on providing services to immigrants by continuing solely with Hudson Valley Legal Services or some other, Hudson Valley Justice Center, anybody that can do that that's on more of a consulting basis, then I think we would need to get with the immigrant services community and find out what alternative we could have so that that group is not excluded. But adding that group in and making sure that we continue robust funding for Hudson Valley Legal Services, I think will be far less expensive than what is proposed here, and that what is proposed here is not sufficient for the whole community of people. So if this is only to serve 100 people, I'm picking that number because it's out of the air, but because it's easy to work with, I imagine that the total number of people might be two or three times that, which means that the total amount of funding that's being proposed here is two or three times that. And as that number gets bigger, I think the advantages of being with Hudson Valley Legal Services get bigger, because these are fully salary benefited people within the county. And I don't think we can get the same quality of legal professionals and stay affordable as easily as the nonprofit can do that.
Other questions, comments, concerns? That legislator proceed?
Yeah, I mean, I had been in favor of funding legal services last year because I thought it would be a better idea to have a permanent department. But you know, I didn't realize it was going to be quite this much. And, I mean, as far as a permanent, you know, department, believing that we could just hire more counsel instead of, because this is a lot of, this is a whole new department. And even then, if we hire the three people, it's still going to be close to $400,000. Legislator Ernie mentioned that you did have some numbers. I know I forwarded some folks to Hudson Valley Legal Services. A couple of them did get back and say they couldn't take their cases because they didn't have the funding. And another one did quite a bit of her own legwork. So, because it was, you know, improper service. The people being represented have been dead 15 years. So I don't know how an attorney can represent dead people. But anyway, so I you know, I would like more information on this. I'm not against it. You know, I'd like to see more permanency because we keep farming out some of the work that we could do here.
So I'm not 100% against doing it this way. I just don't feel that it's ready to go to public hearing until we get the answers to some of these questions. Because what happens is you put this out to the public that we're going to do this. Then if we say we're doing something else, it may seem like we're doing something less. I don't want to do something less. If this program will max out on the cost of it at 150 people being served, and we could serve with the same amount of money, 300 people, I just want to serve the 300 people. So I'd like to know before going this route that it's the best route. And not even know that it's the best route, because what we get from the public may inform that. But I'd like to know that we're in the same ballpark, and if we as a committee agree that we can do something better through a different approach, then put that out for public hearing if it needs it. That's, you know, so let's be sure that we really have a strong push for this particular model before we propose this particular model. And this has pushed us way down the road because now we have the cost estimates for this model. Mm-hmm. And the only question I think that we need to really look more into is what's the community that needs this service? How many people is that? And can that number be served by these three people? I know that Hudson Valley Legal Services is oversubscribed, meaning that with the money we give them and with the supplemental money we give them from ARPA, they still are turning people away. So I'd like to know how much more money we'd need to give them to get in that, how many people they think they're turning away, and what that number would grow to if the community was hearing, yes, Hudson Valley Legal Services can help you. Because right now, the community is saying Hudson Valley Services can't take you, and so they don't get the calls. So I think we've got a big number of people waiting for this service, and this also would take a while to stand up. So I think, you know, to hire the people and create it.
Yeah,
so
there's a date of July on here for hiring one of the principals. Yeah.
So just let's, you know, I think it raises the right questions. It points in a direction that might end up being the direction we want to bring, you know, put before the public as a solution, but it might not when we get that further information. So just like to encourage the sponsor to hang out, help us gather this information, and then help us make this, you know, a responsible choice of what to bring forward as our direction.
I have some comments to make, but I'd also like to hear from the executive branch if there are any comments from whoever on the deputy executive contrarians. If you have commentary on this, we'd love to hear it.
Sure. So this one, I agree with Legislator Nolan on really the need to get granular information on the needs. Because our overarching concern is the operating budget. You all know we just released the executive budget proposal. There was significant growth in it. We did create a new unit specifically dedicated to emergency housing in DSS with three positions. So we're concerned about doing this as well, and any positions that we added in the budget are very heavily dependent on the data that we have to be able to justify it. So
there's not questions immediately before us. I'll share my comments and questions. This is something that we've discussed in the low-income housing working group, and it's been part of many conversations. I really believe this is the direction that we need to go. I think that a lot of the challenges that we have determining how legal services is or isn't servicing the population currently, that is a great example of the types of challenges that you will always face no matter how well the system runs when you're relying on contract agencies. And there is always going to be that lag, and there is always going to be that you know, little gap of separation between what is going on out there and what the county has control over. That will happen with every contract agency we work with. And I love so many of our contract agencies, and I have the utmost respect for them, but there is a difference to running things in-house. And I really think that, considering the work that we've done to be able to invest in long-term permanent housing, which I'm very grateful that we've done that work, there is still this huge gap around anti-displacement efforts. And I still feel it in terms of the constituents that reach out to me. And I believe that even if this was merely comparable with what we're providing with legal services, I think it would be a step in the right direction, because it would provide a much more direct relationship with the people that we're serving here. And I think that is a population that we're not doing enough for. Although I'm very excited to hear about the budget, including the emergency housing and the homelessness work, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. For me personally, tonight I would support a scheduling of a public hearing while we get some of that information. Some of the information around the need might come out at the public hearing, right? That's kind of the point of these public hearings. But I also understand, if it's the will of the committee, that there may be a motion to postpone, and we'll have that vote when we come to it. But personally, I would support advancing this to a public hearing. Legislator Ermer?
Yeah, I just want to thank you. I just want to point out that Legal Services of the Hudson Valley is headquartered in Westchester County, which now has an Office of Housing Counsel. And my understanding is that they came out to support that in Westchester. That said, I recognize the request for additional data. I understand that eviction filings does not equal evictions, does not equal represented people who go to court. I will say that last check in Kingston Housing Court, for example, half of the tenants there were represented by legal services, according to the city. There's a database where you can check on the state for city courts, but checking town and village courts is much more cumbersome, and there's not such a thing, as you might know. Half of them were represented by legal services, and then the other half of the tenants facing eviction were represented by four different firms around the county, none of which are actually landlord-tenant lawyers anywhere that I could tell. Like, they don't list that as any of their two dozen areas of expertise. So people are hiring O'Connor and Partners. That's cool. But O'Connor themselves don't say that we're housing lawyers. And actually, our public defender, incidentally, does have experience in landlord-tenant law. But I would like, if the committee will not like to advance it tonight, I suppose. I wish that they would, but how do I not consent to the postponement?
You can vote against it, but I'll make a motion that we postpone.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on the postponement? All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Okay. And those opposed to the postponement? All right. It is not postponed. That was a failed 3-4. So is there further discussion? Otherwise, I'll take a vote on advancing it, and we'll assume that it might have the same... Wait, hold on. Wait a minute. Let's get this vote again, because I just realized I messed up. All those in favor of postponing it?
You did it right.
I did have it right?
You did. Mm-hmm. Postponement failed.
So it was, okay. It did fail. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then let me go back to what I was saying.
Mm-hmm. Just call the vote on
it. Yeah, so we can look. If there's no further discussion, I'll call the vote on it, and it sounds like it will advance. It is going through two other committees, though. So that's, you know, this will likely be its most sympathetic reception. this is a committee of people that wanted to work on housing.
What?
We want. Well, and hopefully still do. all right. I will call a question, call for the vote on resolution.
I just want to explain that vote.
Oh, please, yeah.
You know, I generally vote in favor of all public hearings, but I think legislator Nolan really hit on some concerns. You know, I also want the public to know exactly what they're going to get. And if there's some questions there that may change the way that they're perceiving this, I think it kind of does an injustice moving forward without addressing those issues. So for that reason, you know, I'm going to be a no. Look, I understand that this is how important this is, but it's not necessarily that time sensitive in order to, you know, postpone for another month in order to address those questions that were brought up. So, yeah, with that said, I'll be a no.
So I'll take the vote from others. All those in favor of advancing this to its next committee, and those opposed. All right, so it is advancing by a 4-3 vote. Resolution number 423, establishing a policy to reform social services, temporary assistance housing. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, second by Petit, and Legislator Erner, I know this has been through a couple of iterations. Have you made progress with the County Executive's Office on finding compromise, and are there any amendments that you can offer tonight?
Have made progress. Let me summarize that progress as I've seen it. I'm grateful for the some of the social services new things in the budget, including the housing homelessness office being proposed. Something went out about playground equipment for children waiting, and we talked extensively in caucus, in the Democratic caucus last night, about this and some other related matters. The administration I trust is looking into whether 24/7 operations for certain aspects of social services or other options to smooth out the 5 p.m. and weekend handoffs and other aspects of client experience. I had not come prepared specifically to make amendments, but I'm okay to postpone it again, and again acknowledging the progress that I thank the executive branch for.
I'll make a motion that we postpone.
Second.
Any discussion on the postponement? All right, all those in favor of postponing 1 month?
Aye.
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 Resolution number 425, establishing a policy to liberalize access to public spaces for survival. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Stewart and seconded by Petit. And Legislator Erner, I kind of have the same prompt. On your progress since we discussed this last month.
Yes, thank you. So, you know, the United Nations invited the nations of the world to say that people have a right to housing. The United States hasn't signed that. New York State doesn't have a right to housing. Obviously, Ulster County doesn't have a right to housing. New York City has a right to housing, which we could talk about maybe another time. But I guess, you know, what is the alternative to doing something like this? What would it cost Ulster County to allow
the people of this county who have nowhere to go, who've lost their right to be on any private property with any sort of security at all, or maybe like literally or unhoused, and like many hundreds of our people are. And so if to me, if public property is going to mean anything, then we have to make good on that. We have to give people a space. So I know I've said that in a way before, but I just want to reiterate the motivation here. Now, the space study is out, and the committee right after this, so I think we're going to take a look at that. You know, we're talking here in 425 about temporary homes. Somebody who's just lost their home. Is there going to be a financial impact? Certainly, there will. But the financial impact of, as Committee Chair Uchitel mentioned just before, about not having enough, not actually preventing people from losing their home in the first place, is also accounted for in the county's budget. And that comes in the form of everything we do when folks have lost their housing and go to social services. So, you know, so I'm just asking that this government act with all urgency and powers to use our existing public taxpayer-funded facilities to help said taxpayers fulfill their basic needs. That's all. And I recognize that's different. That's different from how we've been imagining using county public property, but it's not unprecedented. And I look forward to reviewing the space study. I don't necessarily, despite what the resolution actually says, I don't know that the space study wasn't necessarily designed to identify this need. So I appreciate the administration's willingness to think creatively, and I'm seeing that they're doing that. And but I fully acknowledge that this legislation, as it is not going to advance at this time. So I'm not sure if I have much else to say about that, but I'll just pause there, and I'd be okay to postpone this again.
Any other discussion on this before we hear a motion to postpone?
I was just going to say that I think Phil is really great at making us look at different solutions or different possible solutions to problems that exist currently. And while I totally sympathize with the goals that he's trying to achieve, I mean, I don't think that having people camping out, for lack of a better word, in the lobby of this building or in other county office buildings is really the appropriate way to deal with that. I think it raises health concerns. I think it raises safety concerns. I think the county needs to look at improving our stock of emergency housing rather than opening up our county office buildings or warehouses or garages to having people staying there. So like I say, I totally appreciate and sympathize the thought behind this, but I just think this is not the correct solution.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that says most of it. For me, it's uncomfortable because the legislation states, a broad principle that I do endorse, but I don't think that this broad solution aids more people than it potentially harms. And so what I like to do is come up with the solution that people go, oh, yes, that will help. That when we start offering it, that we have people who will say, yeah, I'd rather have that than the motel. And that the support services people will say, yeah, we can do as well on sanitation and food and everything that we provide in that setting as we do in the current setting. So it's a particular solution that solves the problem. This is like, I'd like to do this because I need a solution. And I'm just not comfortable in that realm of articulating that I want to solve a problem. Like, to me, that's a given. We all want to solve this problem. So I'm looking for the work of, you know, a committee, subcommittee that a working group that I chair that said, let's look at tiny houses, crates, tents, yurts, open air. We talked about each of those. And if any legislator wants to come and go back through that list and add to it and work on those and, you know, come to a point of saying this is workable. Our working group said none of those were workable. And then I get a resolution that says let's do it this way. So I'm just like, it's just too big a gap for me between what I looked at and what I had other people helping. We had immigrant services there. We had social services there. So we did that work, and I just invite, you know, to advance that work rather than to have me vote against, you know, a policy that I would endorse if it had some reason to believe it would help. But I'd like to have more of a sense that this would improve the lives of real people and not harm people. And we looked at the experiences across the country in our working group, and it's very mixed. There are some places that seem to have had a little success. You know, to come and look at that again and work and develop one of those proposals, that I would find really worthwhile doing. So I'm sorry not to be able to support this, but it's just, to me, it just seems like what Legislator Stewart, you know, articulated, that we could end up with people in settings where they're not safe or that some other harmful outcome comes, and we're not looking at a particular solution. We're just saying we will just open up county space. I don't think we can do that successfully. I wish I did.
And I think this perfectly illustrates why we need to be spending money on, you know, warming centers and emergency housing.
We're doing all that. But that, to me, does not fully answer what is called for here, because not everybody can go to a warming center.
Yeah.
And I work with an organization that has people that want privacy and needs, and that we work. So there are still gaps in the system. So I don't want anything that we're saying here to say that we don't know that.
And I think we all agree on that.
We agree on that. And still, and that to me means that maybe there is one of those proposals that could be for a specific county property, not for all county properties, a specific county property for this type of structure or service. If that comes forward and is workable, or if somebody can help me go back and find that, I'm happy to do it. I worked hard trying to do it and came up feeling that we weren't there yet.
Legislator.
Thank you. So I understand the reluctance to support this policy right now. Before we, I'd like to move to postpone it and then have a comment after.
So I'll consider that a motion.
Yes.
Second.
Seconded. So it's for discussion on the postponement.
Consider it. Would those in the room be willing to volunteer if they've ever lost their home against their will?
You will disclose if you ever have lost your home against your will. Been asked to leave an apartment or someplace you were against your will.
Yeah. Okay. And then keep your hands up if you've ended up going to social services for housing help after that. Okay.
And ask about family members?
Thanks.
If it's family members, then my hand stays up. Yeah, I mean, this is not people who are not sympathetic that you're talking with here, Phil.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, I haven't spoken yet, so I'm just going to share my comments. You know, your prior... The legislation that we were considering a moment ago for making reforms at the Department of Social Services, one of the things that's so challenging about navigating that environment
is because of the regulations that have been put in place to protect people that are in that environment. And when I think about the care that I have in my heart for people that are seeking emergency housing, there's a reason that we are so stressed out about the conditions of the hotels that they're placed at, right? There's a reason that we don't send people to the roadway any longer, right? I have a very hard time reconciling our responsibility to keep people safe when we place them in emergency housing with what feels like would be essentially saying, sort it out amongst yourselves, you know? And in this country, we have a long history of allowing people experiencing poverty and disability and discrimination to exist in institutional settings that were horrific. I mean, you can read things about the second part of the 19th century. It's incredible the way that we allowed people to exist. And we've come a long way. And the way that we have come, the manner in which we've come that way is through regulating the standard that we are applying for, that we are applying to the conditions in those settings. And I want to uphold that standard. And for that reason, I don't feel comfortable opening county property in absence of confirming that people are going to be held in care. Anyone in our care is our responsibility. And in this county, we have a lot of people that are in need of care and that we are responsible for. And I want to make sure that we're always going to be positioning them in the best positions that we can. And so I appreciate your willingness to continue discussing this, and that you yourself offered the motion to postpone, I think is, a sign that you appreciate the challenges that this introduces as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And I do, and I mean no disrespect by asking folks to at least identify if they've had an experience. And, I don't know that the county government can actually, it seems like maybe we can't provide what's needed here, but I'd sure love for us to look for who can. I don't doubt that we're doing that, and I just feel like I'm about otherwise throwing up my hands. But thank you. Thank you all.
So I'll take the vote on the postponement. All those in favor of postponing 1 month?
Aye.
Any opposed? Our last resolution is Resolution 127, which was discussed earlier. I'm going to ask that we take no action, so I would, it's my resolution, so I can ask that. I am considering, in light of us advancing the emergency meals grant program, I'm considering withdrawing this, and I'll let you know between now and the next meeting. And with that, I have one note to share as part of new business, which is just that we have our proposed 2024 budget, and so I'll be working with the staff and with the oversight departments that we have oversight over to figure out what, based on the volume of resolutions coming in, when we'll be able to hear from them. But hopefully next month we'll have some overviews of the departments we oversee and how their budgets look for the coming fiscal year.
Don't we need to do that regardless of how many resolutions we have next
we
month?
We need to do it, but it could potentially, if there's a lot, we might actually do a special
second meeting.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
because we're going to try to Public Works tonight, but I just, yeah.
Yeah, well, we could,
know.
We had enough going on tonight.
I'm looking
so.
At the clock, I put my girls away.
Yep, legislator Stewart.
I was just wondering if we have a date for the next affordable housing.
Yes, we do. I don't know off the top of my head, but we actually scheduled them all throughout the rest of the year, so they're all have dates.
Is that like the third Wednesday or?
Yeah, it's like the third. It's like the last Thursday of the month or something like that. Lori has all that information.
It's the last Thursday. Of the
yeah,
month.
But don't trust me. We'll check the staff.
I'll check.
Help
the
us. Because
okay.
It's late, and I'm already calling people the wrong name. So, so with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn. Yeah, moved by Lopez, seconded by Nolan, and all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are adjourned.